reasons to believe. As already been said, I'm here to represent Hugh Ross, who is the president of Reasons to Believe. He and I have been colleagues at Caltech in the past, a number of years ago, and I have in recent years been part of the organization. Now I'm there a day a week and enjoying the fun things and not having to be too involved in things that I don't like to do. But I, with some trepidation, come and present the talk that he's going to give. I'm sure in light of what has already been said here today, he might change the talk from the way that it's here on the slides. I don't have the strength of intelligence to be able to do that here on the fly. So I'm going to repeat a lot of the things that you've already heard, but hopefully it still won't be, or will be, of interest to you. Design for life. Our observable universe certainly seems to show the appearance of design, the need for some kind of transcendent cause for this design that we see in the universe. And the question today is God that transcendent cause, or is the multiverse that transcendent cause? Now, of course, I, being a theist, I have a bias in favor of God being that answer. The naturalist, of course, would have a bias in favor of the multiverse being that transcendent cause. I'd like to take just a few minutes just to summarize some of the things that already have been said, actually, here today about design in the universe. The fine-tuning problem is a problem. The impression of design is overwhelming, Paul Davies says in his book, The Cosmic Blueprint. Paul Davies is not a theist. I'm not sure exactly what his background is. I don't think he's an atheist in the same sense that others may be, but he certainly isn't a theist, and yet he acknowledges and recognizes the impression of design is overwhelming. Another, Freeman Dyson, it seems as though the universe knew we were coming. It's a severe problem. It's not just a problem, but it's a severe problem. This has already been mentioned here today. It requires a level of fine-tuning that it's extreme, and certainly one example of that is the dark energy that we've already talked about. It involves a extreme fine-tuning problem that's known in physics, Lawrence Krauss says, and that fine-tuning has been characterized as being one part in 10 to the 120. It far exceeds any of the possible human design success that we have in our universe or in our world. The gravity wave telescopes are about one part in 10 to the 23. This fine-tuning problem, of course, may be explained away by some new physics that we come up with. That's certainly been the case in the past where if inflation is true, for instance, it deals with a flatness problem that in the past was thought to be fine-tuning to its a degree of, I think, one part in 10 to the 55. So there may be physics that people will invent in the future that will eliminate some of this stuff, but it does seem to yet to still be a problem. It seems that what happens is that as you develop some particular theoretical explanation for some fine-tuning characteristic, that you're able to somehow squeeze and that fine-tuning pops out in some other direction. It's not only an extreme problem, it's a growing problem. The evidence for cosmic design in humanity's specific benefit is increasing exponentially. Some of the characteristics that were described early on in the discussion of the history of design in our universe were, of course, the gravitational force constant, strong nuclear force constant, weak nuclear force constant, electromagnetic force, E&M to gravity force ratio, proton to electron number ratio, electron to proton mass ratio, velocity of light, cosmic expansion rate. All these various parameters were recognized fairly early. And then as a function of design, some of these overall design characteristics of the universe have gradually increased over the years. So it's a growing problem. One may take issue as to exactly what these characteristics are, but Hugh discusses these on our website in some degree of accuracy or of care, And it certainly seems to be that the more we look at things, the more highly designed and the number of characteristics that are designed, not nearly maybe as finely designed as the one part in 10 to the 20, but certainly indicating levels of design and effort. It's that different. Not only is there, it's a growing problem, an accumulative problem, it's a problem that occurs at many different levels. And as we have written about in the books that are published by Reasons to Believe, there are, and other books as well, there are indications that we live in a just right universe, having all of these cosmic design parameters that I just mentioned. We live in a just right galaxy cluster that has the characteristics that foster the kind of galaxy that we have. There's a just right galaxy that we live in, a spiral galaxy, having certain characteristics that are important for life to be able to exist in the universe. We have a just right star, having the kind of properties that longevity and all kinds of different characteristics that make it a star that is just right for supporting life on a planet for an extended period of time. There's a just right solar system that we have, some of the characteristics of our solar system, having the Jupiter and Saturn that it does, the outer planets that provide protection. And there's a lot of different characteristics of our solar system that indicate design. Of course, there's many characteristics, as we know, making our Earth a just right Earth, and the moon being the moon that we have is a critically important design parameter in this within the solar system, and certainly within the overall universe. There's been a growing number of characteristics, total fine-tuning for life in the universe as a function of time. Hugh has listed more than 600 characteristics. He's given probabilities that are indicated there on the right. Not all of those probabilities will satisfy everyone. Some of them may be modified, but nonetheless, it's giving an indication that there's fine-tuning and fine-tuning at every level that we look at in our universe. There is a question of whether there would be less fine-tuning if it were bacteria that we were trying to support rather than complex people like human beings. And so he's enumerated some of these characteristics that indicate that it's less of a problem to support bacteria, but nonetheless, there's still a high degree of improbability that our universe would be able, as it stands, the observable universe now, of course I'm talking about our own Hubble volume. The question now comes, does the multiverse solve this problem of fine-tuning? One of the things that I find helpful in my own thinking about this in sort of a simplistic way and able to present to an audience that's not necessarily scientifically sophisticated is just to think about the coin flipping problem. And imagining you have a room where there's an experiment that's been done, flipping a coin that you believe is a fair coin, and you get 10,000 flips in a row and they're all heads. And this is, in some sense, an analogy to the universe in which we live, where the fact that we have something going on that is highly improbable in this room that we're thinking about here. The universe is, in that sense, the observable universe, has this exquisite fine-tuning, a very improbable state of affairs if there isn't some external cause for it. The multiverse loophole, Hugh Ross likes to use those kind of phrases. Many speculate of the universe theory, or a multiverse theory, can explain cosmic fine-tuning without invoking God. And of course, we live in the particular universe, or Hubble volume, that is fine-tuned to allow intelligent life to exist. What I'd like to do is just go through several different kind of issues or concerns that we would have in the face of there being a multiverse out there to provide an explanation for the fine-tuning that we see in our own universe. The first point is not a major point, but it is a comment from the point of view of a Christian here, and that is that the idea of a multiverse or an infinite universe is not a new idea in Christianity. In fact, in early Christian thinking, some have mentioned some of this earlier, Augustine and others thought for a different reason why people are inventing infinite universes today. He believed that that was sort of a necessary condition of a universe that we would believe that an infinite God produced. So God wasn't as great a God if he hadn't produced an infinite universe. So that was present in that kind of thinking. So it's not that in Christian circles we haven't thought about those things in the past, but maybe there are consequences of it that that maybe Augustine wouldn't like if he was present at our talks here today. It's our view that at present there's no compelling reason for proposing a multiverse other than to solve this fine-tuning problem. Now, again, people may take exception to that. Obviously, people who work in M-theory, for instance, are very excited about the fact that M-theory has inherent in its very structure the prediction of multiple universes. So they feel that there is, in their view, compelling reasons. But when you look at it observationally, what do we see in our universe, other than the fine-tuning problem, that compels us to invent multiverse? There really isn't much. There is this flatness problem that has been mentioned before. The measurement of flatness that we have so far, the best that we have, is somewhere in the range of minus, well, you see the numbers there. It's leaning on the side of closed rather than open. A flat universe, of course, can be an infinite universe. An open universe provides the opportunity for an infinite number of universes outside, or size outside of our own Hubble volume. But the leaning, at least at the moment, is towards a closed universe. But that's up for grabs and will be hopefully available sometime in the future as we get more measurements from the WMAP people. The multiverse models do not avoid a transcendent causal agent for the cosmos. This has already been discussed, the fact that these theorems, BGV theorem, did I say that right? BVG, I don't know which one it is. I've heard it as the Bohr-Dave-Vilenkin-Guth theorem, suggests that it's a very powerful theorem, space-time theorem, that indicates that even all of these other types of speculations about what kind of multiverse that you might have, that they all require some kind of a beginning. And we're not talking about that part or that particular problem today, the beginning of the universe. We're only talking about its fine-tuned characteristics. But even if these multiverse models solved or could be viewed as a good solution to the fine-tuning, they don't do away with a transcendent beginning or an agent for causing the universe to come into existence. Fourth, the infinite multiverse models explain too much. Again, this has been mentioned, the fact that anything can happen. If you have an infinite number of Hubble volumes or an infinite number of bubble universes out there with all kinds of different physics, then anything is possible. If you think of it just in this level one multiverse where our universe is an infinitely bigger than what we see right around us right now, anything can happen out there. That means that there is these duplicate Earths out there where people are sitting in meetings talking about these kinds of things, and not just once, but an infinite number of times. And to me, that just seems kind of, if you can explain everything, you can explain nothing. I mean, if an infinite number, it's the same problem as the Boltzmann brain problem, that if these things can just pop into existence, then their meaning is sort of gone. And all of our discussions here today are just happen to be what we discuss here today, but in the other infinite number of meetings that are going on in the other places in the universe are discussing it somewhat differently. I don't know what they're talking about. On the other hand, of course, a very large number of multiverses may not be enough, considering the amount of fine-tuning that is going on. Where do you draw the line? Where is the whole thing coming to an end? This multiverse hypothesis, or danger of committing a form of the gambler's fallacy, I introduced at the beginning the idea of a room with the coin flips in it, and the way the multiverse is explaining in some crude way is that you have all these other rooms out there where they're flipping coins, and the outcomes in those other rooms are all different because the experiments are good, the coins are fair, and we just happen to be in the universe where all the coins lined up, all heads. And so you ask yourself, well, what's the next coin flip going to be? Is it going to be heads or is it going to be tails? Now, the naturalist would say, well, it's a fair coin, and since I don't believe that there's some fine-tuning brought about by a purposeful creator here, that the next coin flip should be heads or tails, totally independent of what has gone on before. But that's like asking the question, as we continue to examine our universe, will the fine-tuning that we see continue to climb in the amount that we see, or is it going to taper off? Now, the naturalist would say, well, it should at some point, I would assume, taper off. But he's betting on that that's going to taper off, and that the explanation for the 10,000 heads that we already see is because there's all these other experiments out there. But, of course, he doesn't know that they're out there. He's just postulating that they're out there. And in a sense, it's a form of the gambler's fallacy or the inverse gambler's fallacy. It doesn't fit exactly in either one of those. The fact is that design is seen at all levels, all observable size scales. It's an observation that seems to be limited only by technology. And the more and more we examine, as you saw in those earlier tables there, we seem to find more and more indications of design. So in a sense, there is a way in which we can test this hypothesis. How is this increase in the number of design parameters going to go? Is it going to increase? Is it going to level off? Are there parameters that aren't specifically associated with life, but yet but still indicate levels of design? I mean, in a sense, the coin flipping problem is not dependent on whether there's life or not, or it doesn't affect the presence of life, but is yet indicating some level of design. So there may be parameters, maybe characteristics in our universe that does have design or show design, but doesn't fall prey to this anthropic principle that, oh yeah, of course it's that way because that's where we live, and if it were any different, then we wouldn't be here to observe it. So you got to get past that, because all of the other characteristics might be present only because we live here. These multiverse hypotheses can be tested in this way. Another way, of course, is what I indicated earlier, is getting a better number on that flatness number. If we find out the flatness is really not flat but is a closed universe, then that sort of eliminates at least a level one multiverse. It doesn't necessarily eliminate the level two bubble type universes. Well, what's the bottom line of all of this? I can't stand here and say that there is no multiverse. And the initial question was, well, does this eliminate the need for God? Well, I've suggested that no, there's still a question of the beginning of the universe. But maybe there is a possibility of a multiverse that will explain the fine-tuning. At least if our universe, if we find out that our universe is flat and therefore probably very large, if not infinite, that a lot of the fine-tuning might go away. But that doesn't necessarily eliminate the need for God, because God is much more involved than just in the physics of this universe. My inclination would to say that the more we learn about the universe, the case for God as its causal agent becomes more compelling. That's not an absolute comment that I can make, but it's the view that I have and that we have reasons to believe. And so I would fall on the side of those who have already spoken today, which have a great deal of skepticism of whether multiverse is really a legitimate hypothesis to explain the fine-tuning. And I find it much more compelling to believe in a creative person who not only explains the fine-tuning in the universe, but has a lot to do with explaining other properties that we have as human beings, most importantly the property of having a mind. That's my talk today. Oh, I just want to comment that there is a booklet that we put out, Who's Afraid of the Multiverse, that discusses a lot of these things in much more detail, and Hugh's book, More Than a Theory, which again discusses a lot of these things in more detail. That's it.